This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Doctor Who Series 1 or Series 14 or Series 60.
It's a bit much. They need to change the naming. Make it sense. I was genuinely worried when I was watching this. Like, Tom, you said to me, John, you should watch Doctor Who. And I'm like, well, I've heard about The Church of Ruby Road and the episode after that, which we'll get onto. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I was really worried because you bring back Russell T Davies and there's a very obvious expectation for what the show is going to be under his kind of rule. And what I was worried about in the 60th just felt like we're bringing back old stuff for the sake of it. We get a little bit of that in this season too. We'll definitely get to that. But I do think that, like, yeah, it was worrying because it's like, it's just more of the same. And is that what this show needs? Do we need to bring back that same voice of the person who brought it back in 2005? I don't think so. I think we need a new voice. But this season is actually definitely different from the rest. I think Russell T Davies has turned the camp up to about 15. And I feel like a lot of it feels really strange and new and different. The episodes, they show a wide range of tones, which is pretty great. Sometimes it works. Sometimes the show does feel a bit like a pantomime. But honestly, I don't really mind because no two seasons of the show have ever been the same. I'm happy to embrace whatever they want to do. Yeah, obviously, I recognize that it's a shame because the peak of the show for us, it will probably always be the first 10 seasons of New Who, you know, the 2005 revival, particularly Matt Smith, Peter Capaldi's era. That'll probably be our peak forever. But I don't think that means that there can't be value in what's to come. And I think there's a lot to like in this season.
Yeah, I agree. It feels refreshing, exciting. I do agree if we can have new writers on board, because I think that is like really exciting to explore. And it was pretty cool to have Stephen Moffat to write one episode for this. And he has written Peak in the past. Heaven sent. And, you know...
Who said that?
Who said that?
Stephen Moffat just joined the call. Just to drop Heaven sent and then he left.
Yeah. And it is exciting to have a new doctor, a new companion, new everything, new timey-wimey, everything we get to see for this show. And I'm really happy that we get to see different perspectives. That's what Doctor Who is about. Like, you go through different times or different universes. And I think that's really exciting to see what Russell added to this whole series. I'd say it starts off like, oh, what we're treading on, this is very odd. But then it slowly gets better and better, especially in Devil's Court. But then after that, boom, I did not expect boom to go that hard. It was intense. And then 73 yards. I think 73 yards is the most unique. And also, I think Dot and Bubble. I think that is another unique episode as well. I scratched that. Dot and Bubble is actually the most unique episode I've seen.
Yeah. It's a fascinating season because I would say the episodes 2 to 6 are some of the best Doctor Who that we've had. Yeah. And it's such an undefeated run. Those 5 episodes are just continuously incredible. And I think that this season does have a bit of a formatting issue that I do want to go into. But I think that those 5, just week after week, I was tuning in and I was like, this is what I want from this show. And it really delivered. And I think Shuti Gatwa as the Doctor is sublime. I mean, we got a taste. We got a glimpse of him at the end of The Giggle. And he just brought this energy and this excitement. And you hear his theme play at the end of that episode where he's dancing around the TARDIS, pulling all the levers. And it's so just brilliant watching him work. You then get to see him in Church and Ruby Road and then into this season. And I think that he's just brilliant. We get to see the Doctor go through love and loss and pain and joy and excitement and anger and so many emotions in this series. And I genuinely think that Shuti Gatwa is a brilliant iteration of the character. I adore how he plays the role. Just with this season, he's slipping right alongside some of the other best doctors. And across his run, he could be in the top 5. I think the only thing about that he doesn't really have an arc. And that is a real shame, because the best doctors that I think about, Eccleston and Capaldi, are two of the best because they have such strong character arcs, especially season one, season eight. Those two doctors really get pushed, and the question of whether they are a good person, whether they are a coward or a killer, we don't really get that. I feel like we still have a long ways to go for Shuti Gatwa. His performance is incredible. He has some really fantastic episodes, but I want to get into the core of that. When we get into season two next year, I want to know who this doctor is properly. I feel like this season focuses a lot more on Ruby as a character than it does on the doctor. That wasn't necessarily the most interesting path to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think Shuti Gatwa, he is incredible as the Doctor. He just gives so much emotional performances. Like in Dotton Bubble, you get to see that. And that was the first day Shuti Gatwa was on set and filmed. And it's exciting to have Shuti Gatwa be this new Doctor. And I agree that there has to be an arc for the Doctor. But I think season one is just giving us the idea who he is and where he is in time. And I think that is exciting. But I think there's something that has to cook in season two.
Yeah, Russell spoke a lot about how he wanted this season to be an introduction to Doctor Who, and we get so many different flavors of what the show is in this season, but it doesn't really feel like an introduction to me. It feels like a continuation of New Who. That whole series is bookended 2022 when Jodie Whittaker regenerates into David Tennant. It doesn't end, it kind of leaves on a cliffhanger. For new audiences who are watching this new 2023 show, they kind of come into it straight away with the 60th anniversary, which is not made for new viewers, and this season, which I think as well isn't really made for a new audience. I know that especially in America we're getting loads of new people who are watching it, and that's brilliant, but I don't know how well this does to accommodate them. This season is only 9 episodes including the Christmas special, and that is just not enough. I mean, this season is only 8 45-minute episodes. I think that we miss something by not getting those extra 4 or 5 that we'd usually get to see the Doctor and Ruby bond slower. In this season they literally jump 6 months in between episodes 1 and 2, where we're introduced to Maestro, who feels like this genuine threat, but is treated as a massive departure to anything else. Only 2 episodes after the Toymaker, who got a similar treatment. We need more simple episodes with smaller stakes before we can get to that point. And I think it just leaves a lot to be desired. We go from the Doctor and Ruby having just met to them having been together for 30 years. And I sit there just wondering, like, why didn't we see any tension between the two? We rarely get small moments of the characters hanging out in the TARDIS. They immediately become best friends, and that was it. Like, we never really see Ruby's family and how they reacted. We never really get to see side characters who are treated as important in the finale, like Carla Sunday. These things feel essential and just swept under the rug in favor of getting to bigger and better things. For a season that is dubbed Series 1, it feels like they want to do Series 14 rather than reestablish all the conventions and elements of the show for a new audience. And in that sense, the first few episodes of the season feel really at war with one another. And with a season this length, this small, we miss out on the chance to get a wide range of writers, new writers, diverse writers writing episodes. Russell T Davies and Stephen Moffat are both back and are writing episodes in great form. But other than that, we just have one other episode written by someone else, with Rogue by Kate Herron and Bryony Redman, which is a great episode, but it's the first time since February 2020 that we've had an episode that's not written by one of our three showrunners. Without that range of writers, you restrict the show for what it can be in the future. And I hope that moving forward, we either get longer seasons or seasons where Russell doesn't write so many episodes, because I want to experience the good and even the bad of new writers. I want to find someone who can be the next showrunner, who can bring the show to new heights, who can show us something that feels new but doesn't completely depart from what we love about the show. Give us more female writers, more writers of color. I mean, a black writer writing for the first black doctor. All these things are what I think this era could and should be giving us more of.
Yeah, I really agree. Like, this season just felt really short. It just felt really fast paced. You don't get idea of conflict between the Doctor and Ruby. And I think that was the core element of Doctor Who. The Doctor is a Time Lord, and he feels like the human characters, they're mortal. And the Doctor just has so much weight on him. And you do get to see that in Boom, how much he blames himself for putting the companions at such risk or getting them killed. There has to be a conflict. for that to work, to understand about the Doctor and his motives. And then Ruby Sunday's perspective on time, you know, like how she perceives it. It's that relationship between the Doctor that just needs to work. And yeah, I was gutted that we don't get to have an idea of their dynamic, like, properly. Like, you do get to see that somewhere, but it just wasn't emphasized. And I wish they could have done something about it, really.
It's those moments when the TARDIS team are just hanging out in the TARDIS. We get that at the beginning of The Devil's Chord, when they're like, hey, where do you want to go? Let's go to the 60s. And they run off into the costume cupboard and they come back. It's a brilliant camera move and the music's playing and they come back and they're dressed in 60s attire. It is so fantastic to see, but that is episode 2. And after that, I don't think we get a single scene of the two of them hanging out in the TARDIS. The TARDIS used
Where's
for a
the
couple
vibes?
Of... Exactly, where are the vibes? This TARDIS, again, as I said, when we did the 60th anniversary, it's sterile. It's nothing. We barely get to see it as a home. It doesn't feel like a home. We get a moment with Rogue. We get a couple of action scenes with the TARDIS. All the other TARDISes, even though their designs are of varying quality, they really do feel like a home, like a place to be. I think Capaldi's TARDIS is the best one.
Yes.
Just in general, it's fantastic. You know, it's got the mood lights. It's got the chalkboards and the bookcases.
I would live there. Like, with
for
all
real.
The books.
Yeah, just
that'd be
brilliant. I can't believe they exploded it. That set is gone now. That's it. Done.
It's gone now. Oh my God. Yeah.
The episodes, they're all pretty enjoyable, and that's a major step up from season 13. Every episode plays of genre, it feels like expansive and different, and that's a refreshing change of pace from the era, which often felt like it wasn't trying to be distinct with each episode, but it couldn't really be bothered going all the way. And I want to get into spoilers now, so if anyone hasn't seen it, spoilers ahead, because I want to talk about Dart and Bubble, and you've already spoken about this a little bit, but there are a couple of Doctor light episodes, and even though I would have preferred to see more of Gatwa's Doctor, the writers really made the most of not having him available to shoot every episode. And I think that Dot and Bubble is probably my favorite episode of the season. The whole concept of this exaggerated social media that steers people away from engagement, real life, and towards their very deaths. I mean, there's a couple of episodes where we see systems working perfectly to oppress and end human life. I mean, that is fantastic. Again, it's a step up from stories which have been frustratingly centrist at times. These stories are saying, yeah, the systems are working and that's the problem. We see that in Boom and in Dot and Bubble. It's just like, you know, seeing the Doctor's race confronted in such a powerful way, that was utterly spectacular. The previous era felt so unconcerned with the Doctor's gender at times, and it was frustrating since there's so much potential for interesting stories for that. But see the Doctor experience racism and a bunch of rich white kids who would rather die than be saved by him. Discrimination he has never been at the receiving end of. I mean, it was chilling. I mean, Shuti Gatwa's performance, when he laughs and yells, he realizes that there is nothing he can do when face of such prejudices. It's perfect. I mean, as is all the kids going off in a boat. I mean, it's a really poignant reflection of a lot of racist rhetoric, which demands immigrants and non-white people leave on boats. It's not the past or the present. This is an imagined future. This is the conclusion for ways of thinking that we're seeing now. I think it was brilliant. And all of that scored with a dark rendition of 15's theme by Murray Gold. I mean, I was watching it and I just wanted to leap up because it was such powerful storytelling. I was so captivated by it. And even though Russell wasn't the right person to write such an episode that explores racism in such a way, I think he did a fantastic job. And I was, knowing that the episode was going to be about social media, I was like, oh, this 60-year-old man writing an episode about social media, is that going to be good? And it was, surprisingly, it was great. And he really got to the core of that kind of world.
Yeah, it's very impressive how he did that. Like, Doctor Who, at best, works really well with psychological drama. And you get to see that in Dot and Bubble, where the Doctor isn't really there or their companions. And it's like, how can they write such a psychological story? Kevin sent. And, you know, like how...
He's back. Coming in.
And you do get to see that with the main character of the story, who is completely blinded by social media. And it is a great manifestation of social media. Like, it really reflects how we are constantly locked in with our phones. And we all go into this negative path of, like, doom scrolling. And I think that reflects really well in Dot and Bubble. And my favorite episode is Boom. I loved how intense, emotional, It was strong characterization for the Doctor, because it's like, you can make the Doctor shut up, like, you can't move. And I think that is kind of psychological for the Doctor to, like, he's helpless. There's nothing you can do. And you get to see, you know, throughout the episode, things falling apart. And the most devastating aspect of this episode is about war and how war makes profit, hurting innocent civilians. And also, they're fighting a meaningless war. There aren't enemies. They're just fighting themselves, and is devastating. And I think that really reflects what the world today is. Terrible to see that, but I think Boom does that so well. It just tears you apart, really, throughout the episode. And like, how are they going to get saved? I really love Boom. I thought it was really good.
I couldn't agree more. Stephen Moffat, he just hasn't missed a beat. He's actually writing this year's Christmas special, and I'm so excited. He's brilliant. And I think that, yeah, like, it's a close call. Doom or Dot and Bubble, one of the two is my favorite. There's a moment in this, and I'm not the biggest fan of Ruby as a character, and I do have a lot to say on that.
Yeah.
But there is a moment when she, like, rugby tackles a child. I just thought it was so funny.
We have completely forgot about that.
Because in that moment, and I didn't think that Ruby was anything special at that point. I didn't think that, you know, the mystery surrounding her wasn't gripping me. Her personality wasn't doing anything for me.
Yeah.
But then when she tackled a child, I was like, oh, wait, is this what kind of person
it's
this
character development.
Yeah, exactly. I really liked that idea.
You know, you think Stephen Moffat was like, okay, Ruby Sunday is a good tackle child in the script. And then just explaining that to the writers, like, no, no. You gotta have this.
I bet Millie Gibson had a great time with shooting that scene. Just every time having to grab this little kid.
They do takes as well, different takes.
Yes. so much fun. And then there's a couple of episodes this season that really hit the core of some real world stuff that we're seeing now. Like 73 Yards has some like really terrifying election related politics. You know, we're having an election in the UK in just a few weeks. And the idea of like what a politician can do given too much power and their regard for life. That's really interesting. And like you're saying, with conflict in Doom, I think a lot of that speaks to the way that
Doom.
A lot of countries.
Boom.
Oh shit, what am I thinking of? Doom. The video game Doom.
Doom.
We're now talking about Doom.
Doom, the best game.
but that speaks to kind of how a lot of countries are approaching the Palestine-Israel conflict.
Yeah.
And obviously Dot and Bubble with its racism and social media. But one of the other ones I thought was queerness and how that is approached in Rogue. Rogue is a pretty good episode, in my opinion. I was at times frustrated with it because its whole thing was, hey guys, it's Bridgerton. It's like, listen, just saying it's Bridgerton isn't enough to make it interesting. Like, I didn't know
how to feel with that. Like, what is Bridgerton? How do you explain that? Because, like, I haven't seen the show, but you have, Tom. You were talking about, like, you're watching it.
I have. I watched it all in, like, 2 days.
Wow.
I don't even have an excuse. But the main thing in Rogue that was great, I mean, just queerness.
I love the chemistry.
Yes.
It was so good.
It's fun to see the Doctor like experience romance in a way that we haven't really like properly seen since River. It contrasts how they were really averse to queer romance in the Whittaker era. And this time we get to experience some meaningful representation in, you know, as I said earlier, Kate Herron and Bryony Redman wrote this episode where the love and attraction between the Doctor and Rogue is really tender, and it's brought to life by some incredible chemistry between Chiwetel Ejiofor and Jonathan Groff. I mean, especially after Loki season one, which Kate Herron directed, and Loki's bisexuality was reduced to like one word, one line. And Russell T Davies really, really criticized that. And Kate Herron said that she hoped that it could open the door for more kinds of mainstream, bigger queer stories. And here she gets to realize that. She gets to properly show, she gets to put her money where her mouth is and say, yeah, no, I can do this. And she does it amazingly. It's really, really fantastic. And I know that within the space of like an evening, the Doctor is like, I'm in love with this person. But I did think that was fun, and I did think it was done really well. And I'm excited to see Rogue again. I think that he could be a really cool recurring character. I think we've been introduced to some interesting people who could come up again. Obviously, we know that Virada Sethu, who plays Mundi, he's going to be the new companion, and not necessarily that character, but that's really interesting. Speaking of companions, what's your take on Ruby as a character?
She wasn't well developed. Attacking scene. No,
it's just that one scene.
It's just that one scene. It's like out of nowhere, just like, oh, it's just so weird. But Ruby as a character, I've really struggled with, especially at the end of the series, of how they're trying to center the mystery around this character. And as we looked at back with Clara, you know, like how come she appears throughout the Doctor's life here, it just felt like they were just foreshadowing, trying to use that as character development trying to say, oh, what if she's not human, or what if she's this greater eldritch being, you know, beyond our minds and comprehension.
I'm really happy that she isn't.
Yeah, I'm glad as well. But I kind of struggled with the ending for that, like, yeah, how you connect to Ruby, you know, understand that. I mean, they added goblins for an emotional episode, yeah, of the story. And it's just like, how do you connect Ruby? Because her mom dropped her off at church when she was a baby. That was really emotional. Like, I'm just kind of gobsmacked. Like, why did you add goblins in such a heavy episode where she was abandoned? And her central arc is abandonment, and like how she is just completely left alone. Like, 73 yards. That was a really good episode, but it's just felt like she was very one-dimensional. Like, did she have a say on the doctor? Did she have a say on, like, her mother? Again, it just felt like, what are you trying to say about Ruby? Again, it just felt like there was a dynamic, but it's just Ruby that just felt like the back of your mind in the episodes, and just felt like, okay, she's important at the last few episodes. She's mysterious, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up Clara, because I think there's a lot of similarities to Ruby and Clara in season 7. I'm a big fan of Clara, but I must say, Clara in season 7 is a very boring character, because she is nothing more than just this. Yeah. What does the doctor say? He says she's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, squeezed into a skirt that's a little bit too tight. Terrible dialogue for sure, but like, that's what she kind of is in that season. She's just this mystery. And I think that Ruby suffers from the fact that there are some episodes, like 73 Yards, where she's really well developed and she has this whole abandonment thing, but ultimately she's just this mystery. And especially in the final two episodes, she's just, who is my mum? I want to know who my mum is. Mother, why can't I see you? And I think it was a really frustrating
thing. It was frustrating. I agree. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's just like, again, when shows try to bring up significance about a certain character, like who was Ruby Sunday's mum, then it just kind of like, oh, she's just an ordinary person. I kind of hate that. Again, significance and like how they bring up the mystery about it, and it just feels like, oh, Sutek was just kind of afraid of an ordinary mum. What's that about?
Russell spoke about Rey Skywalker, actually. He said that the idea that she was a nobody in The Last Jedi was a really compelling route, and he didn't like how they walked that back. I'm with him on that. I really, really like,
I agree, yeah,
what he was going for, you know, that Ruby, her mum is no one. I think that is a really great idea. But there's so many things that were just so wrapped up in this mystery. There's a tweet here by Bean, who just said, why did Ruby make it snow? Why did Sutek care who Ruby's birth mother was? Why couldn't we see her? Why did the time change to have her pointing? What was the second TARDIS at the Ruby Road in the VHS? Why couldn't Davina find a nurse via DNA tracking? There are so many things that are just, it's so bothered with this mystery that it doesn't really work. And also, Ruby, you have a mother right there, Carla, and we don't really get into the fact that Carla as a mother, the two most important things that Carla does are in two alternate timelines where she's mean. We don't really get to see Carla as this mother figure, and therefore it feels like Ruby just is so bothered with her birth mum, her quote-unquote real mum, when that, you know, there are so many real-life adoptive parents who fear that idea of there being a real mother and a real parent because of the DNA connection. I really didn't like, it didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, it didn't sit well.
I agree with you. I just think that she's just like,
I wish there was something like to really connect towards the audience in some way. It just felt like these were just short stories piled all together and like span across the 6 months.
I really didn't feel it when they said goodbye in the finale. It doesn't, because obviously, first of all, she's coming back. She's going to be in the next series. But it just didn't feel like emotionally powerful. There are times when she really works, especially with her chemistry with the Doctor and when their relationship is challenged. I love all of that. There's some really great moments of banter between them. I liked it when she gave the Doctor a hug at the end of Rogue. That's really nice. I mean, even though I think she's a bit of a side piece in Rogue, she doesn't really do enough.
Yeah.
I think 73 Yards, you know, is a great episode. We have some really terrifying political aspects and the folk horror, and that's all great, and I really like that it focuses on Ruby and you know, her insecurities and her fears. That's really really great. I just think she strikes me as unremarkable. Minnie Gibson is a good actor and she's doing a good job with it, but I just think she's nothing. I think she's just that mystery, and that disappoints me.
I love how we haven't talked about the worst episode. Space babies. Tom, at first I was horrified, like, where were you leading me to this show? Space babies. What the hell? What was that, Russell?
I'm sorry,
what did you cook there? You messed up the starter. You decided to go from a really emotional episode about, like, Ruby Sunday, she can't find a mum, but you went to space babies! You decided to do that!
I don't even think space fairy. I think it's just
Oh, the
fine.
fairy
I
alarm
think
went
it's.
off.
I think. I think it's literally just a mediocre episode. I don't like. A lot of people are acting like it's killed their dog or something, but I
Well,
thought it
okay,
was
I'm
fine.
being too dramatic. I mean too dramatic here. I would say,
No,
why
John,
did
let it
you
out. Let the darkness out, John.
why did you do that, Russell? Please, why did you? I wanted to see more of this Ruby character. Please tell me who if she really is. What is the conflict?
Yeah, the season, it moves too fast, and episodes like Space Babies, which would normally be like, oh yeah, it's one of 12, it's one of 13, it's now one of eight, and it's like, okay, we just wasted a time on a
That
spaceship
could have
with
stayed
the
at the start.
bogeyman and all this stuff. It's a very strange choice to put in. This season is at its best when it's the most simple. Episodes 2 to 6, even episode 1 to an extent, their premises are simple, but their emotions are complex. But then when you get into something like Church and Ruby Road, or Legend of Ruby Sunday, or Empire of Death, I think they're just too overstuffed, and there's too much
Yeah.
going on that it bogs everything down in lore and trying to kind of out-clever itself. Legend of Ruby Sunday, the penultimate episode, specifically, it's troubled with like 1,000 characters and plot points. And once again, they built this finale around a returning villain. But this time, I felt, and as this somebody who knows, I've seen Pyramids of Mars, I know, recognize Sutekh, but I felt like there's so little build-up that it just amounts to like, oh, here's a villain from the past that barely half the audience knows, and for everyone else, we're just telling you that they're a...
It was a good
And
introduction for me.
see, I didn't feel that. Like, I just thought it was just like, here's a CGI dog.
Hey, here's Sutekh. I mean, I thought it
It's
was a good
like...
introduction. I mean, the voice
Bleh.
acting.
I mean,
Yeah.
Gabriel Wolf is fantastic as
Yeah.
Sutekh, and bringing him back after all these years is brilliant. The Sutekh reveal didn't really work for me, but it did for you, and that's great. So I'm curious, what did you think about Sutekh actually like in the
Okay,
finale?
for the introduction alone, I thought it was pretty badass. Like, I thought it was pretty cool just to see that. Gods of all gods. Like, oh, this is like really interesting. I want to see how it goes. But if you put that into perspective, like for the whole series, they don't foreshadow enough for the villains of the story. For example, we had an excellent reveal for Missy in series eight. And I thought, oh, wow, that actually was impactful. There was a bit of foreshadowing for Sutekh, like there was something wrong with the TARDIS. But this is something really odd in Doctor Who. Sometimes you can have such weird moments in the story, especially in the last one where Sutekh was just clinging on to the TARDIS this entire time. What? I'm sorry, that is lazy. That is just incredibly lazy. Like, there was nothing to like really show any signs like Sutekh was there all this time. He was there this entire time with world-ending events, and there was nothing to do about it. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, he's like, "Oh, Ruby. Yeah, I gotta investigate Ruby's mother." What was the point?
The whole thing where he was like, I needed to know
I
who
was
Ruby's
there
mother
all along.
was. And then they were like, yeah, well, we made Ruby's mother important because we place, and it's like the whole thing of the snow falling and the music, it was super atmospheric and it was super chilling. But the reveal of it being just nobody is so antithetical to all those elements. I don't think they work together. But I'll tell you one thing that it does make it worth it for, that Sutekh was there the whole time. The memes. Now, I tell you what, it's not even been a day, but the memes are glorious. The memes of like numerous TARDISes being in place, like, in that Day of the Doctor or something, and Sutekh just looking at himself, just like, what the hell is going on? And
Oh,
the shot of
yeah.
Sutekh clinging in the vortex is so funny. And I really like the visual of him like clawing through the time vortex. That's really cool.
Yes.
Interestingly, as some people have suggested, is that how they bring back Gallifrey? Interesting, because he's like, he'd
Oh,
bring
okay.
the death of death and life of whatever. Interesting. I think that's what needs to happen for the story, because
Yeah.
over 10 years ago, we brought back Gallifrey only for Chris Chibnall to undo that. And that's really frustrating. So I hope that we kind
Why
of
did he
go
do
back to
that?
having, I don't
Chris
know.
Chibnall.
I've
Hey,
seen that
because.
series twice and I still don't know why he did
Twice!
it.
Why
Twice.
you punish yourself? Why you punish yourself to go through such a.
I rewatched the entire show before the 60th. I
Wow,
did it all, John.
I
I
would
did Love
not
and
have done that. I would
Monsters.
not have done
I did
that.
Fear
Like.
Her. I did Sleep No More. I did it all, baby. I did Rings of
Oh my
Akaten.
god. Oh my god,
That's right.
wow.
That's right. I put
But
myself through it.
for some reason, the reveal for Ruby's name was just emphasized at the last moment of the story. It was like. My mom actually named me Ruby. Oh my God.
Why was her mum wearing,
Pointing.
like,
Why was she
pointing,
wearing
wearing like a.
that?
I
Why was
don't
she wearing
know.
that?
The amount of
I thought it'd
people.
be like some trickster thing. It would be like some trickster thing.
People thought it was the trickster, and
But
I
why
wasn't
would you
too
wear
bothered,
such
but. God, I said quite a few times to friends, I might have even put this on Twitter, but I really hope that it was something new, that the reveals at the end of the season wouldn't be a returning villain. And obviously we did get Sutekh. And in terms of Ruby, I got my wish. It was something new, but I feel like, yeah, all the build-up and all of the atmosphere around it just didn't work with the actual reveal itself, even though I like the reveal and I like what it represents. True. And as much as, like, you know, the end of Ruby's story is a little bit weird because she's like, I'm happy because now I have my birth mom. And it's like, bro, wait, yeah, it doesn't sit well with me. I really wish I had better things to say about the start and end of this season. The middle chunk, I've said it a million times, fantastic.
The main course was actually good.
The main course was great. The starter was not great and the dessert was not great.
It melted, Tom. The dessert melted.
It really melted. Imagine, you know how they did that at the cinema? Can you imagine going to the cinema and watching Empire?
They played that at the cinema.
Yeah, they played Legend of Ruby Sunday and Empire of Death back to back. And I can't imagine leaving at like 1 a.m. and just being like, what a disappointment. I would have been devastated because I would have been devastated as well. Yeah, it's almost an hour of anti-climax, in my opinion. And when it comes to the Christmas special in episode one, you can kind of be like, okay, well we're just getting started, so we'll get to the good stuff. And then like we ramp up and it's like, okay, here we go. So then you get to episode 7 and 8 and I just think that it's just weighed down by so many things. It's 1,000 mysteries, too many characters, and I was just thoroughly disappointed. You know, again, Gabriel Wolf brilliantly played Sutekh, and to bring him back was just fantastic. I loved that. But at the end of the day, he's just a dog sitting on the TARDIS, like just as occasionally spinning through the time vortex. Like, I much preferred the idea that the Doctor releases Sutekh when he sprinkles the salt in Wild Blue Yonder, that he releases all of these demonic threats like Toymaker and Maestro and the goblins. I think that's much better. But Sutekh, the way that he is, his dog form, it's nothing tangible. It's nothing the actors can really bounce off from. It's something real. Like, you know, the Toymaker, the Trickster, Maestro, these other members of the pantheon of gods are spectacular. And a large reason for that is because of the performances behind them. And, you know, despite an amazing voice and pretty good CGI, Sutekh was nothing for me. I think that Maestro was the standout villain of the series. Yeah. Because Maestro, they were just such a presence. Like when Maestro crawls out of that piano, so much more terrifying than anything that Sutekh gave me. I was so... And also, they did the thing that Russell, you keep on doing this every finale since season, I don't even know, since season 3, they did it season 3, 4, End of Time, they did it season 1 and 2 probably, but like where everybody dies, and it's like, oh no, what are we going to do? And it's like, I didn't believe it for a second. The moment they killed Rose, and it wasn't in a close-up, I was like, well, there you go.
Well, like, yeah, she's gonna come back. It's so repetitive, and it just feels like when there's like end of world stakes, like really high stakes, and it just feels like justified in any way. But no, it was just like, I mean, it's pretty cool to see Sutekh clawing against the time warp. I thought it was cool to see that.
And also the time window sequence was really cool with like the VHS and like the way that Sutekh really kind of like begins to form. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah, and the weird thing is about like when you look at the last episode, the dialogue is just very weird. Like if you compare that, like it was so expositional. That was just giving us so much information about Sutekh. I'm like, okay, I get it. He's the god of all gods, but it just kept getting repetitive and like, oh, he destroyed all life throughout the universes and time and space. And that was a really weird moment in the story. Like, it just went to a different direction where the Doctor met this woman who was staying at this planet, and she was like the only one there. And it just felt like, well, okay, I thought we're continuing this end of all stakes, and the Doctor just visits this woman to have a spoon,
which I thought was a really good scene and really effective.
It was,
but what are we doing here? It should have been a 3-part finale, surely.
Yeah, it should have been, and it should have been the longest series.
I mean, I'm just really disappointed by the fact that everything kind of came down to such a bit of a wet fart of an ending. I think that Devil's Chord, as episode 2, it's a badly placed slot. It should have been episode like maybe 5 or 4 or something. But that to me feels like a much better example of this world-ending threat and the threat of everyone's dying and all of this stuff. And, you know, they sent it around with music, and Jinx Monsoon is phenomenal as Maestro. Yeah. That to me was a much more more effective than what we actually got in the finale. And yeah. Russell has even said that so much of this series was trying to get engagement on social media. And I know that's the age we live in. I know that's important, but my God, that's not how you write a series. That's not what it should be about. It shouldn't be about getting Twitter to explode. This is an issue that we have in the MCU, not Doctor Who.
It should be the catalyst for discussions. Like, you have such heavy themes about war, racism, and politics as well. Like, these topics just gets the audience to talk about. And that's where Doctor Who really shines. It's like, it gets people to think about life in many different ways.
Every week I go to my old uni and they put a screening on, and it's not many of us there. Last week there was only like six of us, and it's really great to watch it with, you know, a little bit of a crowd with fellow fans. It's really nice. And I remember after episode six, I was like, there's no way that they can drop the ball here. We're cooking with gas. And then episode seven ended, and most people in the room just turned around and went, who's this dog? Who is Sutek? And I was one of the only people in the room who knew. Me and Electra were the only people who knew who Sutek was. We had to explain it. Immediately, there's a disconnect with a lot of fans who didn't know who Sutek was. And I don't even know how they feel about this episode. I'll find out tonight when I go and watch it. Yeah. But like the finale, I just don't know. I feel like I was so sure they couldn't drop the ball, but they did. And it really sucks that they, like, you know, this will not make me think badly about this season. It's a good season, but it fell when it really needed to soar. And I really hope that next season because this is a problem that Russell now has. This is a problem that his finales, I think he is losing sight of what made Parting of Ways and Doomsday so good. And I will say the Empire of Death is not as bad as End of Time Part 2, which I am not a fan of at all. And I think there is something good to find in every episode of Doctor Who. Always. Even episodes that people will, you know, renounce. I'm a fan of Love and Monsters, and people really hate that episode. I think every episode of Doctor Who has something to like.
Oh,
and there are people,
that episode.
Yeah, and there are people online already who really have enjoyed this season as a whole. Brilliant. And that is the most powerful thing, is that this has touched many people, and I'm really happy to see where it goes. And to leave it on a high note, to leave it on a positive, Murray Gold is back, baby. I want to say, I have missed his, I mean, don't get me wrong, Segun Akinola, his music was exquisite, and I adored what he did as a composer in the Whittaker era, but Murray Gold hits different. Even though I wasn't a fan of There's Always a Twist at the End, which, you know, that I will die on the hill that it should have been an actual Beatles song, maybe Twist and Shout, something like Goblin songs, whatever, but he brings some stupendously amazing music to this season.
God. Goblin song.
No, don't think about that. Think about,
why was that a musical moment? Why did the goblin sing?
I don't know. Hit it, Janice.
I don't want to get a copyright.
The Goblin King. He's the Goblin King. You know, like, it's not a bad song, actually.
Oh, that's such a whiplash.
The 15th Doctor's theme is just like, it has this
peak.
Energy. And it's the speed, and it's so exciting, and it makes me want to run and jump every time. It's just like Matt Smith's 11th Doctor, I Am the Doctor. It's the meme, you know, died 2013, born 2023. Welcome back, I Am the Doctor. It really feels exciting in that similar way.
Oh, man.
I am so in love with that piece of music, and I think that this season just overall is so well made and so
it's
well done.
Really,
like,
good.
The man traps and the bird things and the bogeyman and the goblins, the practical effects are just on another level, and the CGI is great, and the budget has been used so well. If anybody's interested in the making of the show, they should watch Unleashed, because that is such a fascinating look at how every episode is made. It's done with such love, such care. I cannot be mad at a single part of it. Not really, not truly, deep in my core. As much as I've been disappointed, I can't be mad at it, because this is Doctor Who fans making Doctor Who, and at the end of the day, it's a bunch of fun, really. I can't truly be negative about this season, as much as the ending and the beginning disappointed me. I'm just glad to have Doctor Who back. It's just great.
I'm really happy. Like, I was enjoying it, you know. I felt like the magic was back for me. Like, I've missed the mystery of Doctor Who, you know, thinking about the theories, thinking about, like, you know, who this character is. Mrs. Flood, that's really what Russell's building around, you know. Who is Mrs. Flood? It's really interesting what people are saying about Mrs. Flood, and, like, does she serve a purpose for the next season? So I'm really looking forward to seeing that and see what Russell is going to do, and hopefully not drop the ball on like revealing it's some, I don't know, like something new. We need something new, really. Like, that's the most exciting thing when it comes to Doctor Who. You know, you must have someone new.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's brilliant for you and for many other fans who didn't really connect with the Whittaker era and didn't watch it. You know, it's great to have people back and enjoying Doctor Who again.
We are
That
so back.
we are so, but you know, it warms my heart to see that. And I'm excited for another season. I'm excited to see a new companion and to see new mysteries. And I hope that the next season has new writers and new creatives on board. But we now have a 6 months without any Doctor Who, which is going to be so long. This is the thing about an 8 episode season. If it was 13 episodes, we still have 5 more weeks of Doctor Who. But no, we have to wait all the way until the Christmas special and then probably another 5 months until season two.
It's weird because, you know, back then when Doctor Who came out, it felt like it was there like every month. It was exciting, it was brand new, and I really missed that. Like, that kind of had that magic for me still with Shoot to Get with Doctor. So that's a thumbs up for me, you know, how they've done that pretty well. So yeah.
Yes, so season one of Doctor Who, 2023 plus the new era,
P2 plus.
the new reboot. I don't even know what we're calling this. Season 14 maybe,
Electric
season
Boogaloo, Doctor Who.
Electric Boogaloo, we're here. What
Yeah,
are you gonna give it out
yeah.
of 10?
I'm gonna give it a 6.
Nice. I'm going to give it a 7. Thank you, everybody, for listening to our 200th episode of the podcast. 200
Woohoo!
weeks.
200 weeks.
How did we get here? I have no idea. 200 weeks
I.
consecutively, we have not missed an upload. I think the only time we missed an upload was by about an hour. We missed the Fast 9 video. And
Fast
that's the
nine.
only,
I guess we
yeah.
weren't that fast.
A. We missed it by like
Hey.
an hour or something stupid. But yeah, we've done it 200 weeks. So brilliant. And this is just the beginning. Thank you,
Wow.
everybody, for listening. If you're listening on YouTube, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, we're going to be doing Deadpool, the first Deadpool. We're going to be getting ready for Deadpool and Wolverine. So that's going to be interesting. It's been a while since we've done a superhero
Yeah.
thing. So it's going to
Yeah.
be interesting to see.
It's refreshing that we haven't had like a lot of comic book movies nowadays. They kind of help the box office, but by
Oh,
saying,
John, what about Madam Web?
don't you ever mention Madam Web again, okay?
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
no.
Shall I
That
leave?
bring
I'm gonna
back
leave.
that
Bye.
I'm a cry.
Don't forget to send us an email, asktimefilmpod at gmail.com.
Please don't leave.
We'll be recording next Wednesday, and we'll answer it right here in the podcast next week. Send us your thoughts. I'm leaving. I'm gone.
No, please, Tom.
Goodbye.
I need to do my outro then. Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, so you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asval, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom, if he's here, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Elgen Smear for the excellent theme, and Roland Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. And you're dancing. You're dancing like, oh wow,
I'm
you're
still
dancing like there's
here.
no tomorrow. You're still here. Okay, this is a monumental celebration right now, you know, for the 200th episode, and Tom is dancing in the background. This is peak. This is peak right now, ladies and gents. Take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Thanks, Tom. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
I actually need to come out. I need to turn the recording off. I'm back.
You came back. Oh my
I'm
God, you
still
came
back.
back.
What?